Okay, I can't tell you the bio of everybody up here, so this is supposed to be songwriting panel. We're opening up for questions. If you guys don't think of any, I've got a few in mind. But let's just go down the line and tell who we are.
My name is Daniel Renstrom, and I serve as a pastor of worship in at the Church of Brook Hills in Birmingham, Alabama. As far as songwriting goes, I've written, I think, 4 records. Some of them have been longer than others. When I started recording, I didn't have that many great songs, so I always thought it's better to do just a EP than try to string out a bunch of bad songs. So so some of those are just smaller length, but I've done an album that's worship-related, one that is a Christmas CD. I wrote a group of songs to teach my girls about, I've got 3 daughters, teach my girls about theology, so it's like a kid's record. And then another worship record in there. So that's me.
My name is Ryan Fogelsong. I'm a music director at a church called Grace Baptist Church in Santa Clarita, California. And I oversee the orchestra there. I teach composition and songwriting at the Master's University. And I've served as kind of the bass player for the last couple Sovereign Grace records. And I was in a band called Enfield for a while. And our primary purpose as a band was to rearrange hymns. So a lot of my songwriting started as arranging existing properties, but kind of I learned about phrasing and learned about melodies and lyrics from those old hymns and started to write my own. And so that's kind of my experience.
My name is Caroline, and I live in Dallas. I'm a mom. That's one of my big jobs. So I have 3 kids, 7, 5, and 3. And then I'm also a singer-songwriter, and what I love to do is write from scripture, not word for word like Adam, but more in a storytelling way. And I like to make records that kind of tell the big story, like a meta-narrative. So they'll drop in on different biblical scenes and tell a big story of redemption. Or the new album that's about to come out is going to tell a big story of kind of what we're redeemed to, the kingdom hope that we're redeemed to. So that's something I love to do, and that's my experience in songwriting.
You want to grab this? There we go. You got that.
I'm Vicky Cook. I've been writing forever. Our first song was published with Maranatha Music back in 1984. Probably our most well-known song is Before the Throne of God Above. Our writing has mostly been for and through Sovereign Grace, but we've written through Integrity, Maranatha, but really our writing focus is for the church, for the local church. And we teach songwriters all over the place to have a passion for writing for their local body rather than trying to become the next American Idol.
And I'm Steve, her lesser half. She's the better half. I'm the uh-huh. And what can I add? We currently live in Orlando, but it's only for a few weeks. I've taken a position to teach at Greenville University, which is outside of St. Louis. So pretty much we'll be from Illinois pretty soon. So,
yeah.
And I guess that's it.
Let me just say thank you for writing Before the Throne of God Above. Probably one of my favorite hymns of all time, songs. I started writing. I'm Adam Wright from Birmingham, Alabama. I lead the music at Cobb Apart Church. Have been there for 8 years. Started writing songs my senior year of high school and unfortunately recorded them. I still have about 900 in my attic that didn't sell. So if anyone's interested, I'd be glad to give you many or several or all of them if you'd like. I have a band called Active Congress apart from my church job, and we've put out, I don't know, 4 or 5 albums of things. I've written most of that. And then in the past 2 years have taken an interest in writing scripture to music, which was kind of an unexpected venture, but really enjoy it. Really kind of feel like there's a voice there for me in it, and I'm going to continue to develop that as well. So.
Good. Thank you. All right, so Bob had asked me to kind of coordinate this, so I will do that. And so this is an opportunity for you guys to ask anything you want about songwriting of anybody and everybody up here. So who has a question? Anyone? Here's one. Okay.
I'm just going to get to this. As far as funding projects, I studied songwriting at Belmont, and I do it myself. How have you found, is it through publishing? Is it through the church and support through your friends and family? How have you found an outlet to make this your career?
You start down there?
So it has been a various, it's,
can we restate the question?
Yeah.
Oops. Yes. So the question is, what different ways have we found for funding recordings?
Right.
Right. In a nutshell. Okay.
So it's come through various ways for me. One of the, I had a church that was incredibly generous to me, when I started, and I had an idea for writing songs, and I thought, kind of like what Adam said, I thought that they were going to be world-shaking songs, and unfortunately, we recorded them. But in the kindness of the church, they just gave us a lot of money and gear and time and stuff because they just saw a benefit in that for us and for the church, and so that project then kind of created capital, which created opportunities, and then as I recorded other things, there was capital there to kind of reinvest in other recordings. So that was kind of how it started for me.
Sure. In the first band that I was in, Enfield, kind of a similar situation, because we were replicating and recording songs that we were already doing on a Sunday morning. We saw it as a resource for our people. And so that was attractive to our church. Oh, you're helping resource. We want these same songs in our Bible studies and all throughout the church. So that was a benefit to them. It wasn't just an artistic expression, which is fine. Those types of projects that I have been a part of, they've been crowdfunded. You're going to your parents and asking for money. But on the church side of things, I was fortunate to be in a church that had, you know, a small nest egg that we were able to then use. And we tried to find strategic ways of using people in our own body who had gifts, maybe recording or mastering. So, yeah.
I have experience with Kickstarter, so my story is maybe a little bit different. I think the thing with Kickstarter for me has been, and when I give to a project, I think it's true too, is to not say, help me fulfill my dreams of making an album. Because a lot of people would love to, you know, make an album or whatever, but how does this serve the church? Or how does this serve someone? How does this do something that maybe is unique? Or, you know, someone's like, oh yeah, I would love to have an album that did that. So I think that helped me too with that weird feeling of self-promotion. Be like, I'm not, you know, for honestly, anyone could make this album. I would, you know, give to it if someone else was making it because I feel like I want that. Does that make sense? And other than that, I mean, I think just it's not all Kickstarter. I still need to, you know, support my kids going to school or doing different things. I want this to be a thing that is sustaining itself, self-sustaining. And so trying not to bite off too more than I can chew, but just being faithful to do the small things. And sometimes it's doing house shows and just saying, God, just let the love offering be what it is. You know, just doing something for free. It's sort of backwards, right? Because God's kingdom is kind of upside down sometimes. So I think sometimes you need to just do the small things instead of being like, well, I'm not going to do that house show for 20 people. I won't make enough money. Because as soon as it starts becoming about money, it can rob you of the joy of the ministry aspect of it. Even this last year, I started thinking about it more as work. And thankfully, God kind of was like, you know, it is work. You need to work hard at it. But it's also ministry, so don't think about it as only work. I will provide as you're faithful to do the small things.
Well, for us, I think we, in our early days, we had a band in California, and we were doing a lot of concerts, and somebody just believed in us and decided to fund our first project. So that's kind of unusual these days. But most of our experience really has just been serving a ministry, serving a church, and, you know, we were there to serve, and if they could use our stuff, great. And if not, well, that was the way it was. But God has really just blessed us. I mean, we've been writing for Sovereign Grace since 1985. You know, that's kind of been our focus, serving the local church and serving Sovereign Grace as a ministry. But this is a real weird day and age for music in general, not just Christian music, but even secular music. Used to be in the old days, you could send your songs to publishers. If they believed in you, they would fund you. They would, you know, publish your songs. These days, publishers will not even take, they will not take unsolicited songs from anyone. They will end up in the trash. But, you know, in our day, early, like in the 80s, we had lots of publishers that we were in contact with, and we would send our stuff and get critiques, and we would learn from them, and you know, it was just a different day and age. Today you have to be your own business pretty much. You have to know how to run your business, you have to know how to fundraise. If you're not connected with a church or a ministry, you're just gonna have to be out there on the road all the time doing concerts, because that's generally where the money is made for an artist these days.
Yes, and I would probably just echo that. there's probably two different potential ways you could go about is, like, what we did was we basically just felt called to serve Sovereign Grace. And so we didn't do individual projects with Sovereign Grace. You know, we participated on the recordings, but it was more faceless kind of concept projects. Even, you know, for years, that's what it's been. So you can just plug into a ministry and just do whatever serves them, and whatever happens, happens. But if you have a particular vision, and especially if it's like as an artist, probably what Vicky said is true. I mean, from a music business standpoint, the paradigm would be you need to build a fan base, play as many times as you can, do, you know, funding online if you can. But most of the income will tend to be from the events, because downloads and CDs and streaming is just fractions of pennies. Yeah.
There's a documentary recently called The Last Songwriter that we participated in, and they're getting like so many cents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Song, and the label is in charge of so much of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But now you have to be an artist if you're a songwriter.
Yeah.
You have to be able to perform your song.
You do.
Yeah.
You do.
And to me right now, the system's sort of broken. I don't know how it can sustain itself right now. I mean, because songwriters, professional songwriters, there's just much less chance to make a living than there was 20 years ago.
Right.
So they'll stop doing it.
Exactly.
So we'll see. I read an article this week where in the UK, the first 6 months of this last year, they were actually up 11% combined downloads, streaming revenue, and physical CD sales, which was good news. Maybe it'll come to the U.S., but yeah, something needs to change, at least from a business model standpoint.
Yeah.
So.
There have been two models for me. So the corner room stuff is all church funded. Kind of like what Ryan was saying, the church sees it as a resource, not only for our folks but for others, and so they're more than happy to invest in that. With Act of Congress, you know, if we're going to go do an album, we're out playing shows and we're taking a percentage of what we would make and we're putting it back for recording. So we've never tried a crowdfunded type things. I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that. But I would say, you know, with CDs, I mean, you know, I just ordered 1,000 of our Love Never Ends, and iTunes is going great. But the CDs, I mean, they're sitting in a closet. So that might be this may be the last CD I press. Yeah. Sadly, actually, really funny story. Some old friends came by and visited last week, and I said, "Have you heard our new project?" "No." Let me get you a couple copies. So I went up to my office and said, "Here's some CDs." And their youngest kid said, "What's a CD?" I was like,
wow.
I was like, "There's the affirmation that it's time to not do that anymore."
Yeah, that's true.
Crazy.
Okay, good question. Another one, right here.
Mine is regarding your approach to songwriting. Do you find that the majority of your inspiration is like very intentional? Like, do you go searching scriptures, like, I need to write a song, so let me find something? Or do you draw a lot of it from personal experience or your personal like devotions or something that just really just hits you? I mean, I know it can be either or, but majority, is it intentional or is it more inspired, I guess?
Okay, so kind of how the songs would start for each of us?
How you approach songwriting in general.
Yeah.
You
start
say, here? I need to write a hit, or do you say, wow, I just had an idea. I mean, you know. Or I asked. You know what I mean. In your mind, you may approach it that way. I want to write a hit, so what am I going to write?
I'd say in the past, since I've been at Cava Park, the songs that I'm writing, and some of those have been these scripture songs, it's been really interesting because a lot of what's going on in the life of our church becomes what I write about or write, period. Like the Psalm series in that summer, that it was going to be Psalms set to music. Our pastor did the 1 Corinthians thing the following fall, and so I picked the chapter 13 to do. We're in the middle of a kind of a life is mission type focus sermon series. So I've written a song that our church can sing congregationally along those lines. So a lot of what our church is doing is what I'm writing or trying to write. So it's kind of governing that focus.
Our song ideas have come from just all different ways and sources, but I would say by far what's happening in the church has been the biggest influence, and books that we would read, Spurgeon and Piper, and we've had song ideas from a sermon where we basically put the outline into music, in a sense. To one time, "Your Praise Will Never Cease" was something that Grant yelled out during worship. He shouted it. It was like, hey, that's a song right there.
Exactly.
And it was just kind of at spur of the moment when he said it. I thought, wow, that's a good title.
Exactly.
So we never set out to write a hit song. Not that we could if we wanted to. But I think we try to focus on what would serve our church,
right?
Like the message, the content, like what will actually help people and serve them. It could serve them in helping them celebrate the grace of God or trusting God's sovereignty, in difficult times. But more of the focus of wanting to write excellent music, of course, but making sure there's a message there that is meaningful to them.
Yeah. Just to add to on top of that, it's just keeping a songwriter's notebook where you keep up your ideas. In mine, I've got a section just for titles. I've got a section just for, things, sentences, phrases on the cross, on the blood of Christ, that lots of different areas where I just keep ideas. And usually it's gleaning from sermons. It's gleaning from, see, he mentioned Spurgeon and Piper because they are two of our favorites that we always glean from. But you're going to have other people that just inspire you, just whatever writers. Poetry, reading poetry. Can be very inspiring, and you can just get some really great metaphors and ideas for songs. But you keep all those ideas in your songwriting notebook so that they are right there at hand when you're sitting down and saying, I want to write a song. What can I write about? You just start perusing through that notebook, and you've got tons of wonderful, inspiring ideas right at your fingertips. So that's where having that songwriting notebook on hand is really helpful.
I don't have a lot to add, but I think the answer to your question for me would be both inspiration and intentional. I think some of the most powerful songs just in general are written when someone has walked through something and then applied scripture to that and come out on the other side. So you have the feeling of it and the emotion of it and also the truth of it all in one. Or a friend is going through something or something like that. But you might not even realize. So, for example, on the new album, I wrote a song called The Two Lost Sons, and it's about the prodigal son story. But Tim Keller wrote a book where he says both sons are actually lost. The elder son is actually lost as well. Because a couple of years ago, I was really struggling with, this is recorded. I'm going to talk about what I'm struggling with. But, anger, oh, God, we've been moving so much for you, and this is not working out, and just this elder son kind of feeling. And so I wrote this song, and it has nothing to, on the surface, you wouldn't know it was about me, but it is, because I'm applying that truth to myself. So I intentionally was like, this story has meant a lot to me, and so I intentionally went to it. But then it's also inspired by, real life happenings. I think people can pick up on that.
Yeah, I'd echo what they've all said before me. I think there's something about sitting in a room on your instrument and not letting yourself out until you come out with something. I find that if you know, there's a book that Vicky and Steve recommended years ago called Six Steps to Songwriting. Sixth Grade. Jason Blum. Oh yeah, it's great. And he says your first step is pick a title, because the title has to be hooky. And then you go to your hookbook and you start to look for phrases. You start to look for turns of phrases and idioms that kind of fall into that category. And you can kind of get into the weeds with and be creative about how you kind of build verses and things like that. But so I think being strategic, put yourself in a room, try to just come up with something, whether it's just a title or just a chorus. I also think, you know, good art begets other good art. I went and saw Dunkirk the other night, and I just thought there was images and camera angles and things so well done in the movie that inspired, you know, lyrics. How would I describe what's happening on screen? How does this terrible situation, this rescue, this war, how can I apply that to what Christ has done and rescued us? So I wrote a couple things after seeing the movie. Like, I wanted to leave the theater and write it, but I couldn't. It'd be a distraction. So even going to, you know, we have the Getty Gallery, art gallery in L.A., and I love going there and just seeing what inspires lyrics from something that's non-lyrical.
What was the name of the book you said again?
Six Steps to Songwriting?
Songwriting Success, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
By Jason Blum. B-L-U-M-E. Yeah.
B-L-U-M-E?
Yes.
Blum. The only thing I would probably add to that is that I've been really helped when I have a clear focus of what I'm trying to get on the other side. So I like writing when I have a project that I'm working on. And so that helps me curate all this kind of information. I don't have space in my life right now just to set aside this time to that time to write every week. I wish there's probably so much benefit. There would be a lot of benefit in that, but I just don't have that time. And so, but when I do have a focus or a project, if I'm writing a kid's album, if I'm writing something else, then I'm thinking all the time about that. And it kind of helps me know what I'm looking for, you know, and I'm always looking for something like that. And so that I have found that to be a real, real help in my songwriting. So, yeah.
Good question. Right here.
So, coming from a perspective of somebody who writes music but is not intentional about writing worship music, what is the balance between not feeling guilty, but like balancing writing stuff that isn't necessarily worship oriented, but rather just from the life and from the experience of a Christian writer? Mm-hmm. Like, that probably isn't a clear question, but I guess how would you balance writing for church and just writing from the perspective of a person going through life?
Yeah. Sure.
I'll go ahead and start. I think part of it depends on what your
question.
What is the question? I have an answer. So how do you navigate, let's say, the balance between writing songs from a Christian perspective and something specifically for the local church, would you say? To me, part of it would be determining what your goals are, what you want to write for. Because if you're writing for the local church, there's going to be certain limitations you have that you wouldn't otherwise, you know, in terms of the range, complexity, even the tone, like the voice of the song, the clarity of the song. If you take away the constraint of the local church, music can largely be anything that's entertaining, but then maybe you want to interject meaning to it. So it just depends on what your goals are exactly. I have no trouble with a Christian who just wants to make a living writing songs, you know, as long as the songs they write glorify God and don't have to explicitly, but you know what I'm saying, like write about themes that would be appropriate for a believer to write. But apart from that, it's going to be largely, I think, determining what you want to do, what you have a desire and a vision to do, and then that gives you parameters or lack of parameters. So you want to add?
Yeah. Like you said, when you write for our focus is writing for the local church. That we feel that's what our calling is. That's what God has given us. So that's our focus. Now in songwriting, the things we teach in songwriting can go across the board in on any genre really. Our parameters are much smaller, like I was saying, for worship, because we're writing for non-musicians. We're writing for people who can't sing, who don't understand music. So everything's got to be very small and lots of repetition, things that the non-musician can get in a church. Whereas your parameters are much larger when you're just as an going out there as an artist or as a songwriter. I would say just make sure you know what your calling is. What is God calling you to do? God calls us all to very different things. I remember as a kid hearing about Pat Boone. I don't know if any of you remember Pat Boone. He's an older gentleman, but he became a teen idol when he was very young, but he became a Christian somewhere along his journey, and he and his family would be doing stuff, traveling, and he was on shows, and he was always doing secular entertainment because that's how he got known. But it was behind the scenes that, you know, he would share his faith and people were getting saved, and really just a neat family, a neat man. And he was constantly criticized for not singing Christian songs and not singing for the church. And he just came back and said, look, this is what God has called me to do. You have no idea the fruit that is born because I'm doing what God has called me to do. Even though I'd rather sing Christian songs, I am doing God's work behind the scenes where nobody sees. And it's just like, yes, God calls us all different things. So do what God is calling you to do. Do what you have passion for. Do it to the glory of God, whatever it is. And you're going to be fine. God's going to lead you.
I'll say this too. You know, I would also say feel freedom to not have to put yourself in a box. Like Sandra McCracken, I heard her say once, I asked her about the success of Rain for Roots and, you know, writing songs for her kids and that kind of thing. And doesn't it make you want to do more of that? And she said, well, yeah, it does. But in my opinion, the other things that I'm writing as a songwriter, you know, that aren't necessarily in a Christian market, are just as important to my kids' development and my ministry as are the songs I'm writing for the church right now. So, you know, feel freedom as an artist to do both. There's nothing saying you can't, you know, write in both camps.
I might add one thing to this, just about the idea of calling. Adam, I don't know if you got to see Keller when he came to Beeson. Were you there? Tim Keller came to Beeson a couple of months ago. And he shared, somebody asked a question kind of like what you're asking, not particularly about songwriting, but they were asking a question about calling in life. And he shared this threefold wisdom that, oh my goodness, was just so helpful. And I've used it since then as I talk to people about, like, what's God calling you to do with your life? You know, 20-somethings are always going, what do I do with that? I've got all this desire. What do I do? So he said calling in life is wrapped up in three things. It's affinity, ability, opportunity. Affinity, ability, opportunity. So affinity is like what you're just like attracted to, what you want to do. You wake up and it's just kind of buzzing in your heart. You love doing this. Ability is the ability to carry that out. I might love songwriting, but I have no ability in it, you know? And that's a way of discerning calling right there. It might be really interesting to me, but nobody likes my songs, right? But then the last is opportunity. You might have the first two, actually. You might have all kinds of ability, all kinds of affinity for this, but nobody is saying, I want to buy your music. Or nobody is saying, I think that you should do this here. Songwriting might be a little bit tricky because you kind of have to keep at it, because at first you don't always have opportunity. But something like an opportunity to lead worship at a church, you know, if you want to do that, but there's no opportunity, right now you're not a worship leader. You know, you just kind of enjoy it. And so if one of those things, if you've got affinity, opportunity, but no ability, you know, if you take one of those away, you're not going to have calling. So when those three things are kind of put together, that's when you identify, okay, this is a calling for me. This is what I need to do. So,
yeah, I would say don't feel guilty. I was in punk bands and rock bands writing, you know, just for, you know, writing out of my own experiences. And I didn't write a worship song until my youth pastor said, hey, you write some songs, right? We're going to be studying Isaiah chapter 6. Would you write something about coming before the throne? I'm like, yeah, I will. And that was my first foray into songwriting. And even that, I remember writing the song. Keith Getty came to our college, and I got to show him. And I was so proud of this thing. And he's like, the chorus was, woe is me, for I am undone, and my lips are unclean. I thought it was a great lyric, straight out of Isaiah chapter 6. But it was all these major chords, and Keith goes like, what are you doing, Ryan? We've got a minor sound and lyric, and you're going to all these major chords. And I went home and go like, oh, yeah, of course. he's been a huge inspiration for me. I think there's something about putting constraints on yourself, and whether you're sitting in your room, I want to write a Broadway tune. I want to write a kid's song. I want to write a worship song. Those become the pipes through which your creativity, like water, get to flow through. You're putting constraints on yourself. And that, in turn, will affect the way that you write other things. So when I wrote more and more, you know, worship songs, congregational, the melodic span shrunk. You know, I'm dealing with more repetition. My chord progression becomes easier and more recognizable. That affects the way that I write, you know, a pop song for an artist. So it's good to put those restraints. It everything affects another thing. So.
Anything? Okay. Good. Good question. Another one. This side.
So, as someone who wants to make music, what sort of education or training or kind of certification would you say is, if any, would you say is a good idea? Like college or like, I also want to do like a recording studio.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So a career that would involve
recording.
Mostly recording or being an artist as well, or okay, all right. Okay. Well, obviously with recording, you've got to learn what to do somewhere. So either a school, a good school, or someone that would take you in, you know, as a mentor at a studio that you would just learn from, which is kind of the old-fashioned way. You know, in the music industry, there's no guarantees. The people that tend to succeed have a lot of drive because it takes a lot of time, whether it's learning the recording side of things or even as an artist, just working at what you're doing. I would probably focus on one of them over the other. Meaning like the artist or like the recording engineer producer side, and try to get really strong at one of those first. Because if you do them both at the same time, it's better to get good at one of them probably faster, is what I would say. And there's a number of programs that you could go to school-wise that would do that. But the school is going to be just the beginning. In other words, if your career is a house, it's just the foundation, and you've still got to build the walls and paint and, you know, there's a ton of work to be done after you graduate, but it can give you a good start. So,
Dr. Fox?
Yeah, I think, like, so I went to college at a very classical, they valued classical music. Like, anything pop related was, like, frowned upon. Mm-hmm. So, which is, you know, the complete opposite of what I'm doing now. But the theory, the vocal training, even some of the ear stuff that I learned there, I'm still using today. And some of the computer music composition, you know, notation skills. So, you know, I'd say it all depends on kind of what you want to do. But I agree. I think narrowing your focus is important in that.
Down here?
Yeah.
Okay, so many thoughts. Okay, you don't have to go to college to be, you know, a great musician. You know what? You should know theory, music theory. Even though I know it can be a little daunting if you don't know it, really it helps. Music is a language all to itself, and musicians talk in a different way with each other. You're going to be missing out. You're not going to know what they're talking about if you don't have some basic music theory. Not that you can't write great music without it, because you can. The great Irving Berlin, write Christmas, wrote all these songs that we know and love and have survived for decades. He didn't know a lick of music theory. All right? So it's not that it's impossible, but it does limit you as far as the way you communicate with other musicians, you know, just getting yourself on paper, just everything. So make sure you know at least some music theory. Going to school, if that's an opportunity for you, great. I was a vocalist, vocal performance. It was all classically oriented. It took me 2 years to get the vibrato out of my voice. After I left school, and you know, it was really frustrating for me that I couldn't just sing the style I wanted to sing. And unfortunately, a lot of schools are really behind in the curve. All they teach is classical, although there are some schools out there that are doing both, that teach you the classical training but also will invite you to sing Broadway, pop, you know, just because the techniques are so different vocally. So there are schools out there. In fact, Greenville University, where Steve's going, is one of those schools in Greenville, Illinois, Christian school. So they are out there. But you just go into a university college with eyes wide open. Make sure you understand their program and what they're teaching. But education really is very valuable. It just makes you so much more confident as a musician.
Yeah. Oh, you got it. Two things I would say, and I definitely don't feel like I fit into this, so I'm not saying that you have to be this, but I've noticed that a lot of what you learn and grow in is by who you're around. Mm-hmm. So if you have the opportunity to live in Nashville or another hub, or even like a place where at a church where there's a lot of really strong musicians, where you can be part of a songwriting community, or they're recording there, or like in Austin Stone has a lot of, you know, just different places that are actually putting out their own music. I think you can, that's almost better than that's a great kind of school where you're hands-on and learning. I think also too, I've noticed that some of the producers and, first of all, like, life is kind of long. Like, you might think you're going one direction, and God will, like, as you just are faithful to these little steps, God will just take you in another. So that's kind of freeing, right? We don't have to know, like, where we're going to end up in even 5 years or 10. Yeah. And definitely not in 30 or 40, you know? So just be open to wherever God would lead you. I think I've noticed that in Nashville, a lot of the, especially with the music industry way it is now, where there's not quite as much money in it, a lot of the producers also can play like several instruments, and so they'll, or maybe they can engineer the album too, and so they save by, they get more of the pie by being more of the pieces, you know what I mean? So it might be good to diversify your expertise, whereas like if you're an engineer, you can also play bass on that album, or if you're a producer, you also know a thing or two about booking, or you go out on tour with people, or, you know, there's just maybe learn several crafts, because I feel like the way the industry is going, and you guys can tell me more, you have more experience, but the way the industry is going, it's away from being, you need to be a specialist in several areas and move with the waves of where it goes. All of a sudden, we need people that are graphic designers and can make lyric videos, and you know, maybe you do that, and you do engineering, and you're a barista. You know, so it's like, just be open to whatever combination of it, you know, it is. God sometimes surprises us, the flow of our lives. He'll take us where he wants us to go as we're just faithful to keep working hard and learning. So.
I too went to a classical university, never took a songwriting class. I wish they offered it there. The main thing that I learned there was music theory, and I'd agree with Vicky. It's extremely important because it expands your vocabulary. And you have more choices and colors to pull from. I think what college does provide is just structure. So if there's a structure in your life where your curiosity is constantly being fed, where you're learning, and it's kind of like that step thing, whether that's a mentor in your life or it's a group of songwriters that are always spurring one another to write better if you have a version of the Inklings, then that's great. But for me, that music theory, that four-part writing, that study of 20th century harmony, how it's evolved from Gregorian chant, was immensely helpful for me.
One last thing I would say about this is if you can try to get some type of internship, I think that would be incredibly beneficial. So find the song that you think is the greatest song ever produced, ever. Yeah, by Danny Rich. And find then who produced that album. And then if he says no to your internship idea, then find another one and just keep asking. And if that's the path you want, try to spend a summer or semester with them, because you'll see in those 6 months working in a coffee shop and then giving the rest of your time there, do I love this? Is this something I want to give my life to? And then it kind of helps you make these other decisions. You know, do I want to go to school for this? How did this guy get there? What, you know what I mean? That kind of jazz. So.
Good question. Right here, and then to you.
Okay.
Just as a quick one, like, how do you guys vet your songs? Like, do you have go-to people in screening something, whether it's for a project or just for performance or like that?
I can start again. Because this is an easy one for me. I've got two friends that they live in the town that I used to live in, and every idea that I ever have becomes a voice note, becomes a text message to them, and I usually within the hour hear back and, oh, that was horrible. You know, don't never do that again. Stop sending us texts. No, that I just send stuff to them, because that has become kind of a really quick line of, is this a good idea? I can't tell. You know, that's the question I'm trying to figure out. And if they say, yeah, I hear a kernel there, then I'm like, oh, okay, let me keep tinkering. So that's.
I always try to pass off songs to people who are non-musical. So my wife is non-musical, and so she's an excellent case study for my son. In fact, you know, like, I'll be tinkering on the piano, and she'll peek her head in. She's like, Melody was supposed to go up there. Like,
oh, yeah, you're right.
but non-musical people, they're thinking holistically, not parts. I think we can tend to think in parts. And if you're a songwriter that writes very slowly, we can tend to get bored of our own things. And so then we start to come up with, like, alternate trails to get to the same one where really we just needed a straight line there. So I'm also, maybe I have low self-esteem, but I'm very suspicious of something that comes out right away. So I like to let songs incubate over time, whether that's a couple days, a couple months. I come back to it and go, like, did I really kind of take all the pathways to get there to explain it in the most succinct way, where I just didn't tell it. I showed it through the lyrics. There was enough imagery and emotion packed into that line. So that's me.
For both albums that I put out, I have Team New Album. That's a really clever name. And I just email some friends and people who are more acquaintances too, and some of them are, and I'm trying to write from scripture, so some of them are musical, and they're going to mainly, I know from our friendship, they're going to be mainly listening to the music. Some of them are more theological, or very theological, and I feel like I trust them, and they know a lot about scripture, and they'll notice words are like, you know, you said son, but it should probably be more not so gender specific, you know, or something like that. Or they'll be like, this is not really clear, because somebody might think you're saying this when I know what you mean. But and then I'll have them, like, I mean, I have like a system. So I'll have them, like, tell me your three favorite songs. If you had to cut three songs, what three songs would you cut? Or, you know, and they never obey my rules. They always are like, well, this is my top favorite, or, you know, but they send back feedback that's like super valuable, that's like spreadsheet worthy, and I can see on that which songs are standing out. I also play new songs at concerts, not all new songs, but just being able to tell which songs I want to play and which songs people respond to over years, it becomes more obvious. Like, these are definitely going on the next album. I've heard too, like, if you're writing congregational worship, I think it was Zach Hicks that lives in Birmingham, maybe somebody else, that he had a bunch of people from the congregation or just friends, not necessarily musicians, come over and they sang these songs. And you can tell when you're worshiping with a small group of people which songs are sticking and which songs are powerful and which songs are falling short pretty quickly. So I think that's a really, if I ever do like a worship album, like, I'm totally doing that.
Yeah, just to hop on that. I would always say, especially for worship writers for the church, don't introduce them on a Sunday morning. With the PA and with the band and everything, it kind of can cover up the people, and you really can't tell if they're getting it or not. I mean, to some extent you can. We found it much more helpful to introduce a song in a small group. So our community group, our care groups, whatever. Because it's only one instrument and just the voices. You can tell really quickly where they're kind of afraid to sing, where they're just not getting it, where they're not following, all those things. It's just, they're very exposed in a small group setting. So that really helps. But you need to get feedback on your songs from somebody. We have always tended to go to somebody that was more in the music industry you know, somebody who knew what they were talking about when it comes to songwriting. And because we've just been with Sovereign Grace for so long, we still pass our songs by Bob Coughlin all the time. It's just helpful. I know they're your babies, and when you're not real confident in your songwriting, it's just really hard to hear feedback sometimes. But man, it makes you so much of a better writer. It just stretches you. And I am so grateful for the feedback we have received for all these years, because we would just be terrible if we hadn't listened.
Yeah, just expanding what Vicky said, I think for us, there's like an easily available feedback system with Sovereign Grace, so multiple ears would hear it if we sent it to Bob, for instance. And so because it's been there, we've largely taken advantage of that, I think.
Mine's similar to these other folks. Have a few friends that are going to kind of look at it from different angles. And then if it's something I'm going to do in church, I'll run it by the pastor too, just to get his thoughts and make sure I get the all clear from him. So,
you had a question.
Yeah. It's kind of along the lines of, your songs are your babies, mm-hmm. especially as like a singer-songwriter. Yeah. But I just wanted to hear your thoughts. So it's kind of an open-ended question. But like, wisdom on collaborating, like, how do you know when to give and when to take, and when to, like, okay, we'll sacrifice that lyric, or we'll mm-hmm. sacrifice this line or beat. I don't know, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
yeah
just want to hear your thoughts on that.
I'll go ahead and go first. In collaborating, I think it's best to commit to the relationship at least for one song, right. And then just say, I'm going to trust this person and let's try it and see what happens. And then maybe it doesn't turn out well and you wish all those things that you thought should be differently were different. But if you don't commit to it and you're second guessing in the moment, I just think it hurts the process. So if you can commit, in other words, you both need to be happy with the whole song is what you want in the end, right? I mean, that's what you would want as a collaborator.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I would do that. I wouldn't just collaborate with anyone. I would collaborate with people that we thought we had a good chance of clicking with. Mm-hmm. And some of it is writing style and personalities. But that would be my advice. If you have somebody you want to collaborate with, commit to it at least for a song and just see how it goes. And if you didn't like it, just move on.
Exactly. And sometimes when you're collaborating with people, it's funny. We've collaborated with some really great writers in Nashville and other writers that were just serving their local church. And it's like, you would think great songwriters getting together in a room could come up with a great song, but it's not necessarily true. It's just like, sometimes you just feel it click, and other times it just doesn't, and it's just kind of elusive. So I think that's really wise to just commit for one song. Just say, let's just try this one song and see how it goes. If you're unhappy with it, just don't collaborate in the future. But you know what's really great? She was talking about, you know, what if you're having to throw out lines, you know, and suppose you really like those lines and stuff like that. What is great about having a songwriting notebook or having an aural, you know, kind of way to keep all of your melodies and chord progressions and stuff is nothing is ever thrown away. Okay? You might not use it in this one song that you were thinking you would, but if you don't, you save it in your little file system, and you're going to use it for another song. So nothing is gone. Even those babies, those lines that you love, those phrases that you go, oh, I've got to use this in a song. You're going to use them someday, some way, somewhere. So nothing is ever lost for a songwriter. It's okay.
Sure. I'd say, you know, some collaboration, so in the band with Active Congress, the guitar player and I tried to write some songs early on, and I'm the wordsmith. Like, I'm a grammar Nazi. Like, all my texts are sent with like proper punctuation and commas and all these kinds of things. Yes. And the rest, the other three of the band, they're like, yeah, whatever. You know, they're thinking about how it sounds. And so it was really challenging for us to kind of arrive on, you know, the lyrics that were going to be in the song. However, he's much better at like finding the hook and things like that. So, you know, I would say that some collaborations where, you know, you've got the Rodgers and Hammerstein type chemistry where, you know, somebody's going to come in and just be able to knock lyrics out of the park, but then somebody's going to be able to come and put the musical touch on things too. Something to keep in mind as well. It doesn't always have to be from a text perspective. That makes sense.
From a publishing perspective, I think it's always good to record your sessions together, in case down the line there becomes a disagreement. Now, this isn't, if it's friendly, that's one thing. But if it's strategic and you're trying to write, okay, we got to write Let It Go for the next Disney movie, and you're in a room full of four people, record your sessions so you know what percentage people added. Because I've seen good friends kind of get burned in those situations. And again, but if you know, it's just you and another person, I find it's helpful to describe what your strengths are. I'm very slow when it comes to lyrics. Melodies come rather quick to me, but there's other people who can just spit. They're like Elton John. They can just spit out lyrics, and it's all making sense, and it's rhyming. You're like, how are you doing this? I have to go home and sleep on it and work through the grammar. And is that the best word to use there? Oh, we use two syllables here, no reason for it. So I'm much more surgical that way. But it's about having an understanding. So it's like, we're going to be in this song for an hour. We're going to work on it. We're going to go home for 2 days, and we're going to come back to that. And that's just the relationship that I have with this person. So, yep.
I would say, too, like, if you have a song that's, like, really, really your baby, and you don't know the other co-writer or... this is the first, I don't know that I would bring that. Maybe it's like one of those things that you come, not in like a selfish way, just more like it does make it hard once it's out there and you both touched it, but you don't feel as good about it anymore. So I would say, if you find somebody though that you know, like I have a friend named Sean Carter that I've written two songs with, and I just really trust his abilities and how they balance mine. So I know that I'm stronger in having a concept and having like an idea of where I want a song to go, of the verses, and he's stronger maybe in the melody on the chorus and the bridge. And, you know, he can also help me with lyrics too. So it's like we just have this good friendship where I know that if I come, I'm always gonna like this song better. I usually come like with a song like half done or almost done, but I know that I trust him to change it because we have a good relationship. But I think if you're just writing you just want to try out co-writing with someone, you come with maybe some broken pieces of songs, an idea, but it's not like the song almost done or the song half done that you just love. It's really personal to you. It sounds kind of guarded, but I think maybe as you build those relationships, yeah, you'll be able to bring those songs
that you trust somebody to finish with you, because it's definitely like a tender, it's a tender thing, like it's definitely a dance when you're co-writing and you don't have the same style, or I think it's also you need to have the same values too, whereas maybe somebody wants to just write a song that sounds just like the radio or very commercially viable, and you come in being like, no, I want it to be more like real artsy, and I mean, it's just not gonna, you know, you might balance each other out, but it might also be like kind of a train wreck too, so yeah. It's okay. It's okay for it to not work too.
The one thing I would add is, and this isn't necessarily about collaboration, but letting really good people see your work at some point. I've worked with two producers. I've worked with more than that, but two in particular that were really, really good. And one of them helped me identify that what I was trying to do with a set of songs, I was not accomplishing. And that was hard to hear, and because I thought differently at the time. I look back now and go, man, he was right. I wish I would have listened to him, but he was absolutely right. And then another person, a guy, we recorded a couple of Christmas songs this past year with a guy named Ben Shive, and Ben was probably like the greatest musician I've ever worked with in my life, and just understood so many things about these songs that we were trying to create that I didn't even really get. And so handing over something to him was fantastic, and it was so good to like know that this is going to get cared for in a much better way. It's going to come back to me in a much better place. And so it just kind of reminded me that as often as I can, I need to get them in front of really gifted people, better than me, basically, to be able to kind of help where, almost like what Caroline was just saying, make it better where I'm not as strong. So
here and then here.
One thing that's not that, but yeah. When you go, so you're meeting with somebody for a co-writing session, you've never met them, or you've met them briefly, you don't know their style, you're sitting down, what do you come prepared with? And where, do you have that piece of that song that you've been holding on to? Or how do you even, what are you going to say first? That's always my struggle. It's kind of, once we get into it, it's great. It's like blind dating. Yeah.
If possible, I would take time to get to know each other a little bit. Like just chit-chat, find out about their families or whatever. Just get a little bit of a comfort zone with knowing them a touch, because I think I can make a difference. But otherwise, I would bring ideas, and hopefully they bring ideas too, and try them out and just start going back and forth with them.
Talking a little bit before, seeing what they're passionate about that day can be helpful. We were in Nashville, and we were together with Alan from Sela, and him and one of the guys connected, Jared. But anyway, they were very burdened because a friend of theirs had just had a miscarriage, and they wanted to write a song of comfort. You know, it was just like, that was the passion. So it was just like, you know, we went into that just trying to care for them. And, you know, we did come out with a pretty decent song out of that time. But I think mostly when you're going into a co-writing session like that, where you don't really know the people, or even if you do, having some kind of snippet, come in if you can with a title to a song, a decent title. And these don't have to be connected. Come in with some kind of melodic idea for a chorus or a verse. And like I said, these are just pieces, parts, things that you think, it's pretty good on its own. It's a pretty good part. Or you might come in with a part of a lyric, maybe a beginning of a song or a really great hook. Because anybody who knows songwriting, especially in the major music areas, you know, New York and Nashville and L.A., you know, you have your people, you have your title people. They just come in and they've got great titles. Or you have a hook person, and they come in and they're just, they're hooky. They just know great hooks and they bring them into the song. And that's what they contribute in the songwriting process. So everybody comes in these parts and pieces. Now you don't have to be the whole songwriter necessarily when you're collaborating. You're going to have to give up a little bit of your freedom, but just come with parts. Come with lots of just of little parts.
It's a weird thing of wanting them to have enough space to bring their stuff to the table.
Exactly. That's why you come with parts. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Exchanging ideas.
Uh-huh.
Maybe you share one you got and they got share one they've got and
exactly.
You know, go back and forth.
Yeah.
Anything done?
I mean, you kind of mentioned this too. Not only just like snippets or ideas within a song, like lyric ideas mm-hmm. or something, but also just kind of like they already said, but big ideas. Like, what if we wrote a song about this and it moved in this verse, it was about this, and by the end of the song, it's about this. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, I've been thinking about that too. And it's something that's on both of your hearts that you can, you're both passionate about, you're ready to go. But you have several of those where God's already like, I mean, I guess it depends on what kind of song you're writing, but God's already moving in your heart on that. You already know kind of where you would go in Scripture to kind of get inspired or, yeah. So just big ideas, too, I think, is mm-hmm. cool to have.
Anything?
Sure. Yeah, I think big ideas are great. Again, I write really slowly, so if I can have some sort of contact with that person before we actually get to the session, I can kind of prep in mind. Let's say we're writing a song of confession. Then in the key of confession, I have all my terms. I have all my turns of phrases. I have, maybe a melodic contour that I think might work. That way I come prepared with ideas. Because it is hard to just kind of like trade back and forth. I also find if there's a story, country songs are great at this. If I can provide a verse one, a chorus, let them write the verse two. To see where they take it. Where did this character go after verse one happened? And again, you're rising above then the concept of the song, and you're kind of up in the clouds, and you're more talking big picture.
I have nothing to add.
I got one more thing. When it comes to co-writing, it's really helpful to know your own personality and your own strengths. We were talking about this yesterday in the master class. If you are an extrovert kind of personality, and you would know this by Myers-Briggs tests and all that kind of stuff. But an extrovert personality is energized by outward stimuli, usually people, things, outward of themselves. Extroverts love face-to-face collaboration. They do very well in it. Whereas if you are an introvert, you are energized by inward stimulus, by quiet, by thinking, meditation. Face-to-face collaboration is going to be real frustrating for you. And those kind of people are going to be probably better served by creating on their own and then getting together for the like editing process and giving each other assignments and then go back alone and create by yourself again and then come together again and say, okay, we're editing, what's good, what's bad. That's how Steve and I create together. When we first were married, it was really very frustrating as we sat down at the piano together and go, okay, what should we write? And it was not very fruitful. So
it was because we didn't know that when you're in creative mode, you stay there. We would write one line and go, what do we think of this? And we would try to analyze it. And then we would try to be creative again. And it was just like, the brain wouldn't turn back on, and it just was hard.
Right, because when you're in a right brain creative process, you cannot let the left brain enter in, because if it does, it shuts down the right brain. Okay, so you're just going to have real frustration trying to create stuff. So when you're in the creative brain, you got to stay there. But anyway, introverts, you create by yourself. Extroverts generally create with other people. Okay, it's just a little aside there, but we have found it's true.
Question here.
So I'm primarily a lyricist. I can't say I can make melodies.
Yeah.
I'm not one of those crazy people that turn on lyrics like crazy.
Okay.
And I don't think about the structure beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Also on chord. So I just, you know, have a theme. Someone gives me a theme. So I'm lyricist. Give me a theme that you want. just have a song written with a descriptor about, and then I'll blast that out and never change anything when I go back because it all fits. There have been occasions when I've cut words out, but when you have that, but you can't do the musical part of it as well, what's a good outlet for that where you can collaborate with people like you're talking about? Because I don't know that nobody else in our church is currently interested in songwriting. We do a ton of song and great music and all this other stuff, but bringing a new song in is not something that our church will see. So someone in my situation, what would be a good outlet?
So is the question, as a lyricist, how do you find people who could write melody and music to collaborate with? Okay.
What's a great spot to look to get to collaborate with people?
Yeah, the first thing I would do is make some contacts here of people that are looking for a lyricist. Just because here you are. And with technology, you can stay connected in a good way.
You want to add anything?
Yeah.
You just said it.
Okay. I mean, the other things are, you know, find a local songwriting group or online group. I mean, there are forums and different things. You guys have any other suggestions?
I was just going to say, just as a lyricist, I know songwriting, songs are your babies, but as a lyricist, you're going to have to learn to give and take, you know, with a person, melody person, because obviously we want a good marriage between music, melody, and our lyrics. So, yeah, just finding somebody that you can trust, you know, and again, commit to that one song together and just see how it works. You can find out a lot in that one song process. But, yeah, get people's emails here, all right? Just say, I'm a lyricist. I need somebody to help me with melodies. And just, you know, you can do a couple of Skype sessions together or just send emails back and forth. It's a great day and age for technology.
So what's your name?
I'm Dan.
Dan. All right, so if somebody here wants to have a lyricist that they can collaborate with, find Dan, okay?
Okay.
He's tall, I think. When you stand up, you were pretty tall, so you won't miss him. All right.
I think there's
a question here? Over here, did I see a hand?
Oh, wait,
on the back.
Just going to say, like, there's great hope in knowing that some of our most beloved hymns existed as lyrics for sometimes hundreds of years until they found the right tune. So we treasure people who are, you know, writing great lyrics. Mm-hmm. And you'll find a melody somewhere.
Yes.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you get somebody that's better than you to do that?
Right, yeah. Good question.
So who said it? You start.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
That's a good question. I mean, part of it is that as you write and as you get like capital, so to speak, for like you have enough things under your belt, you have a couple of projects that you've done that you're going to be taken a little bit more seriously, and you're going to be able to meet more people and just look at it as like a long game, and don't immediately send all your stuff to the best musician you can think of. You know, wait, just kind of build friendships, wait for things to come together organically. The people that I worked with were people that I was doing a project with, and so in a way I hired them, you know. So that is an aspect of it. But I would also just really encourage you, always be on the lookout for people that are better than you in this field. You know, those are going to be really good friends because they're going to push you to get better. So
there's I don't know if it's still in existence. So I'm sorry if it's not, but there's a thing that a woman in Dallas who manages Shane and Shane started. I honestly don't know a lot of the details, but it's called Analyze My Song. And for a pretty small amount, they'll have industry type people or analyze your song. And so I think there's services like that you can pay for. And I know that's not ideal, but that's just one thing that you can look into. I know there's some other people, like there's a guy named Andrew Osenga who used to have his own band called The Normals, and he played with Cayman's Call for a while, and he's offering himself as like a mentor type person. There's somebody named Krista Wells that does that, and it's minimal amount of money, but it might be invaluable. In Dallas and Nashville and in Minneapolis, there's the Art House, and they have different things you can sign up for. One is songwriting feedback, and they're moderated by somebody who's like in the industry or just a little further along maybe than most of the people who sign up. And so that's an easy way to get feedback on your song, not only from your peers but also those people. So I wonder if that exists, you know, in Dallas and Nashville and Minneapolis, if there's other things like that that you can find. And I'm sorry I don't know them all, but maybe they're out there more than we realize, just a little searching.
Where's home for you?
I'm actually speaking on Pat Manners.
Yeah.
He's been writing songs and has hundreds of people, you know, that are repertoire. He can't get anybody just to really pay
attention to Yeah.
He's got a thumb drive, he's got sheet music.
Yeah. You
know, yeah, nobody wants to really listen.
Yeah.
He just wants to mature because, you know, he can have a
kind of Yeah. Are there any songwriter groups in the area? I mean, a lot of metropolitan areas would have something. Yeah.
You got Raleigh close by.
Okay, well, I think we need to wrap up here. It's about 12 of, and we were supposed to quit at quarter of, right?
Yeah.
All right. So, are you going to say anything?
I was just going to say, you know, just go to your worship pastor, your pastor. He is the worship pastor. Do you do his songs at church? Okay, so people don't know he wrote them, so his songs are getting used. Well, that's actually quite wonderful. You know, a lot of times we just try to start bigger than we really should. It's like start in the world that God has put you in, you know, with the people around you, having the song sung at church. Generally that's how we started, and it just other churches started picking up our songs, you know. You kind of let God have his way with your babies and just see if there's, you know, fruit and blessing. And other than that, you know, sometimes our songs are meant just for us or for our small church. And you know what? That's okay. It's great. Just because we're not on the radio or doing cross-country tours and stuff, it doesn't mean that God hasn't given you a gift. It is a gift. And it can bless you. It can bless your family. It can bless your church. But let God have his way with your songs and with your ministry. And let's work at just being content with where God has us, and work hard. And if God wills, you know, he'll take our songs and our ministry other places, but don't belittle the gift and the ministry God has, even if it's just a small one for you.
All right, guys, thank you so much. Appreciate you coming today. Hope you have a good afternoon.